based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, and then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
There's a lot of talk that the new Supreme Court, one with two Trump justices on it, might overturn Roe v. Wade. So the court can't just wake up one morning and say we're overruling Roe v. Wade. I think supporters of abortion rights are right to be nervous, but they're maybe not exactly right about how to be nervous, what to be nervous about. It's a shorthand, sure, to say Roe v. Wade could be overruled, but that's not the only or even the most likely outcome. Let me take you through the possible scenarios.
Adam Liptak, Supreme Court reporter for the New York Times, explaining the various ways that a newly comprised Supreme Court might take a look at Roe v. Wade and might make some decisions that would severely affect both the decision and, as the New York Times said, access to abortion. It's part of a New York Times story titled, How a Supreme Court Shaped by Trump Could Restrict Access to Abortion. Welcome back to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking about that New York Times piece with David French, constitutional law attorney. Then we will return to our series on the Book of Proverbs. We'll be talking about fallen reason, natural wisdom, and revealed wisdom. Pastor Jonathan Fisk, author of the book Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again, will be our guest for the remainder of the hour. Joining us to talk about a New York Times story titled How a Supreme Court Shaped by Trump Could Restrict Access to Abortion, David French, constitutional law attorney, previously served as senior counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice and for the Alliance Defending Freedom. He's senior writer for National Review. David, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Can the Supreme Court simply overturn Roe?
Yep. It certainly can. Roe is a court decision like Dred Scott or Korematsu, which was the decision that affirmed the right of Franklin D. Roosevelt to intern Japanese Americans at internment camps. It's a case just like Plessy v. Ferguson, the separate but equal case. And Supreme Court precedents can be reversed by the Supreme Court. Roe is not in the First Amendment. The right to abortion isn't in the Bill of Rights, which, of course, the Supreme Court cannot excise any rights from the Constitution. So it's just a court decision, and the Supreme Court can absolutely reverse it. Now, they just can't wake up one morning and say, we're going to reverse Roe. They have to have a case in front of them that presents legal issues that are relevant to Roe v. Wade. But it absolutely can just reverse Roe if it wants to.
There's been a lot of action occasionally in the life of the court since Roe, where cases were brought. They were brought by people who were eminently confident that the court was going to uphold Roe, and so they had the very little fear about bringing anything that dealt with the substance of Roe before that court. But that is going to change. How likely do you think it is that anyone who is in favor of abortion will want to be part of a court case headed toward the Supreme Court that could call into question Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting issue, because what you're going to see, especially if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, and I expect him to be confirmed, you're going to have a five-justice majority that is more conservative than the previous five-justice majority, or more originalist, I should say, than the previous five-justice majority. And so I'm not certain that people on the left will be eager for cases to reach the court, but it may not be entirely up to them, because there are already cases working their way through the justice system challenging state laws that have restricted abortion rights, particularly in red states, And if the states lose those cases in the lower courts, they will appeal them to the Supreme Court. So it's just not the case that the pro-choice world can keep a case from the court. They can try by not appealing to the Supreme Court, but it's far from clear that they could entirely prevent that from happening.
One of the more intriguing things I have heard since the retirement of Justice Kennedy is a kind of a careful focus on Chief Justice John Roberts. I've heard over and over again from various people, he's an incrementalist. We heard that from Adam Liptak in the New York Times piece, and that he's not going to go at Roe all at once. What do you think about that way of looking at it?
It's all speculation. There is a thought, a concern, I would say, amongst a lot of people that maybe Chief Justice Roberts and maybe others on the court would not be enthusiastic about overturning Roe on a 5-4 vote, that there might be more enthusiasm for overturning Roe if there was a larger Supreme Court majority. There's others who say, well, you know, the Roberts jurisprudence tends to be more cautious jurisprudence in that, you know, it's going to do more bite-sized sorts of cases that take a chunk here and a chunk there rather than overruling Roe. There's just a lot of different possibilities, And the fact of the matter is the only thing that I can say with a degree of confidence is that if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, that the court will be more originalist than it was when Kennedy was on the court. Everything else, I think, I feel like that's a very fair statement to make. Everything else is just a guess.
Adam Liptak set out two, what he called nuclear options. One is just flat out overturning Roe v. Wade. He said it was highly unlikely. And then the other one was, in some form or another, the Supreme Court overruling the right to privacy and thereby removing the foundation of Roe. What do you make of that scenario?
Unlikely. Just for this reason, that I think it's not that likely that a litigant will go to the Supreme Court of the United States and ask for the eradication of the right to privacy. I think the right to privacy is not actually a constitutional right. That is, it's not enumerated in the Constitution. I think there is a concept of privacy that governments should respect, but there is not a right, constitutional right to privacy as articulated by the Supreme Court of the United States. But I just don't see too many litigants going to the Supreme Court and just flat out asking the Supreme Court to remove the right to privacy in similar fashion that I don't see too many litigants going to the Supreme Court and asking the Supreme Court to, say, for example, overturn same-sex marriage. I think it's far more likely that you would see a litigant go to the Supreme Court and ask for a reversal of Roe, and not much beyond that.
On that right to privacy, since it was kind of one of the penumbra that was formed the basis of the Roe decision, how is it distinct from other enumerated things like a right for a person to be secure in their person and their papers and not to be subject to search and seizure without due cause? How is it different from that?
For one thing, the right of privacy is broader than that, and it's not enumerated. So what the Supreme Court basically did years ago was to say, well, it's almost like these other things, like the right to be, you know, not to everything from not quartering troops to right to be free of unreasonable search and seizures, were aspects of a larger right. They called them the penumbras and the emanations of this sort of larger right to privacy, which is a very odd way of looking at words on a page, that they're sort of like reflections of a larger concept. I would agree that there is a larger concept called privacy that the founders then said we're going to only constitutionally protect certain core aspects of privacy. But what the liberal justices did was essentially say, well, since there are aspects of privacy protected, then the whole thing must be a constitutional concept, which is just a really unusual way of reading a constitution.
And just to refresh our memories, how was that alleged right to privacy applied in the case of a right to abortion? Connect the dots for us in Roe's...
Well, it's essentially that Roe said the right to privacy is broad enough to include the right to an abortion. Now, interestingly and conceptually, that would have to depend upon a finding that the actual child in the womb is not a human being that has its own little bundle of rights. that it is potential life, in other words. And so what essentially, what you have to realize about Roe and the cases leading up to it is it's garbage reasoning. It's ludicrous reasoning. It's results-oriented jurisprudence. Even when Roe was decided, there were progressive jurists, progressive lawyers of some renown and note who thought that Roe was just a shoddily decided case, a poorly reasoned case. But the goal wasn't to read and interpret the Constitution in an airtight manner. The goal from the outset was to secure a right to an abortion. And so how you got from A to B was less important than getting from A to B.
In your thinking, what is the most likely scenario for how a court newly comprised with two Trump appointees will deal with the issue of abortion if given the opportunity, deal with the issue of Roe?
It's just a guess. I mean, it's absolutely a guess, but I would be pleasantly surprised if the court overturned Roe, but I would be surprised. I'm not expecting it.
What about restrictions on abortion that would come as challenges before the court?
At the very least, I believe that there you will see some restrictions upheld that wouldn't have been upheld under Justice Kennedy. At the very least, I think that the framework announced in Planned Parenthood v. Casey that says there's a right to an abortion and the state can't put an undue burden on the right to abortion, that the definition of undue burden will be relaxed a bit, perhaps. Let me put it this way. I expect to see some marginal restrictions on the right to abortion. I hope to see Roe v. Wade overturned, but I do not expect to see Roe v. Wade overturned.
How likely do you consider it that despite expectations and despite, I think, what was the president's intent in placing these two men, one of them already and one of them potentially on the Supreme Court, that the court, when given the opportunity, won't touch Roe at all, like so many previous courts have?
I have been down this road too many times before to expect Roe to be overturned. I'm old enough to remember very distinctly Planned Parenthood v. Casey, when a Republican majority court was redeciding the constitutionality of Roe and upheld the right to an abortion. So I've been down this road before too many times to have any really contrary expectations. That being said, I mean, there's a chance. There's a chance that Roe could be overturned. But I would note that if Trump was focused single-mindedly, if he had laser focus on overturning Roe, I'm not sure he would have nominated Brett Kavanaugh. I think he would have nominated somebody more like Raymond Kethledge or Amy Coney Barrett. But I don't think his single-minded focus was overturning Roe. And I don't know that Justice Roberts focuses on overturning Roe. I don't know that Brett Kavanaugh's focus is on overturning Roe. I have a greater degree of confidence in Alito and Thomas and Gorsuch. But again, you know, until we see abortion jurisprudence from Gorsuch, we can't really know for sure. It would be a very, very big step, and I will believe it when I see it.
Since you mentioned Casey, many people view that as kind of another tragic event in the ongoing attempt to protect the unborn. Did Casey do anything to improve the shoddy reasoning of Roe?
No. No, it made it worse, because essentially what Casey did was say, I believe one of the phrases was, liberty finds no refuge in a jurisprudence of doubt, which is a fancy way of saying we're reaffirming the right to an abortion. And then the undue burden standard, which in theory, there were some feminists at the time who were worried that that was going to lead to excessive restrictions on the right to an abortion. The undue burden standard proved to be so malleable that it didn't really mean much at all. Yeah, there are states that have passed more abortion restrictions since Roe, but the heart of the abortion right is still intact right now. It was not touched meaningfully or materially by Casey. And in fact, what Casey did was reaffirm that fundamental core heart of the abortion right. And so that's why Casey was an unmitigated tragedy, and also a real tragedy for all those millions and millions and millions of people who had voted to put Republican candidates in office, Republican candidates who selected judges with the expectation and hope that those judges would overturn Roe, and then only to be disappointed by the judges who broke from any sort of sensible originalist jurisprudence to affirm the abortion right.
It would be naive to think that justices make any of their decisions in a social vacuum. They simply don't. They consider the consequences and unintended consequences of their decisions. I don't think anyone believes that a serious chipping away at Roe would be without social consequences in the United States. How big a concern should that be?
It's a concern for sure, but I will say this. Since the early 1990s, the conservative judicial world and the conservative legal world is far more robust. There is a conservative legal community that is socially robust, intellectually robust, and spiritually robust. So I feel more confident that a justice won't make a decision now because of concerns about, for example, peer groups and social standing. But I'm still concerned that they will make decisions not based on the original intent of the Constitution, but instead saying, well, I'm just not willing to create that level of controversy in the wider country. Part of me wonders if that didn't come into play with Justice Roberts' decision not to overturn Obamacare, because he would have deemed it to be quite disruptive in the American political system. And he was perhaps worried that that would have some impact on the perceived legitimacy of the court. Because there's no question if Roe is overturned that the left will just explode in rage and anger. There might be riots even. And so there might be justices, I think, who are more looking at that than they are, you know, sort of the stereotypical D.C. cocktail party, because conservatives can throw a pretty great cocktail party too.
Before we let you go, David, I'd like your reaction to a story that broke this morning. A Colorado baker who insisted his religious beliefs justified his refusal to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple, an argument partly supported by the U.S. Supreme Court recently, has sued the state again for opposing his refusal to bake a cake celebrating a gender transition. What is your reaction to that story?
I wrote about this today. It's malicious and foolish. This guy who was trying to get Phillips to bake a cake celebrating a gender transition was also somebody who apparently tried to get him to bake cakes celebrating Satan's birthday. So this is the kind of person we're dealing with. This was not a good faith effort to get someone to bake a cake that meant a lot to him. He was trolling Jack Phillips. And you know who's trolling Jack Phillips now? Also, the state of Colorado. But it's one thing when a private citizen trolls and harasses Jack Phillips. It's a whole other thing when the state of Colorado does it. When the state of Colorado does it, then the First Amendment comes into play. And I think they may end up regretting. I think they may end up regretting that they decided to do this, because Jack has a fabulous case right now.
David French is a constitutional law attorney. He previously served as senior counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice and for the Alliance Defending Freedom. He's senior writer for National Review. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. David, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
When we come back, it's time to return to our series on the book of Proverbs. We talked about wisdom to begin with. We're going to break it down a little bit in our continuing introduction to that book. We'll talk about fallen reason, natural wisdom, and revealed wisdom. Pastor Jonathan Fisk, author of Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again, will be our guest.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. Edgruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at edgruesome.com. That's A-D-C-R-U-C-E-M.com.